Our next speaker, I'm very privileged to introduce not only person I consider a longtime friend as well as friendly rival in the trust business. And I think part of the reason why we get along so well are the things we have in common. For instance, as many of you know, Beth was a litigator before she became a trust administrator. I was a litigator before I became a trust administrator. Beth is blonde. I used to be blonde. And my team can tell you it was real and spectacular. I showed them the picture last night at dinner. It was outstanding. The third thing is Beth's originally from Plano, even though she works out of Houston. I at least like to dine in Plano. Really good restaurants. With that said, Beth truly is one of the experts in this area of court-created trusts, both 1301 management trusts and Prop 142 trusts. And so please welcome my friend, Beth Owens.
Thank you, Chris. And notice how he said that they saw a picture of his hair. I've known him for a really long time. Never seen much up there, so. Okay, so as I told Chris, this is a kind of a topic that I could either talk for hours on or talk 5 minutes on. So I've got my timer going so that I don't ramble on forever. So let's see here. I kind of got roped into this a couple years ago because really, the last trust officer that did anything on a trustee's version of a 1301 or at the time 867 roadmap, it was actually Charmaine Moody, and that was back in 2001. And so a bunch of people hit me up a few years back, you need to do this, you need to do this, you need to do this. And I said, oh yeah, great idea, great idea, great idea. 3 weeks later, a paper was written. That was my life for 3 weeks. Didn't realize I was taking the bar exam all over again. So, but here it is, the roadmap, and I'll start here. So I kind of start with the why would you do a court-created trust? So they're both, whether it's the 142s and the little backs, in my paper I go into kind of the history of the 142 versus 1301. Of course, 142s started first in Texas. That's your typical settlement trust in the property code. And that's very similar to a lot of the other settlement trusts across the nation, for that matter. In Texas, for those of y'all, I know we've got a few of you guys out there. In Texas, I feel like our guardianship statutes aren't quite as friendly as some of the other states. So we really had a need for something other than our typical guardianship. And luckily, a bunch of people got together and made that happen with the 1301 trust, which kind of mirrored 142. Over the years, there's a few more discrepancies between the two, but at the end of the day, they're both very, very similar. And I think the whys are similar. So for a Section 1301 trust, it's a least restrictive alternative. Most of you guys are very familiar with, you know, the court's pushing, let's look at something other than a guardianship. And that's kind of the way it is with the 142. There's not a guardian. And I'll go into detail, the no guardian is a big deal with 142. The second reason is family dynamics. Whether that's somebody's going to have a potential spouse down the line, you know, that girlfriend that's been coming to the settlement, the mediations and everything else, well, we might want to do 142 trust because a girlfriend may turn into a wife, and that, let's do it that way. On the 1301 side, typically your family dynamics is created by a sibling rivalries and all sorts of fun and interesting things that happen at Thanksgiving. And then third, guardian unable to post bond. I see this more and more and more. If it's a larger estate, guardian can't post the bond. It's just the way it is. A minor, and I just put on there minor. So a lot of the courts have leaned more and more towards a 1301 if you have a minor that inherits something and the parents are still alive. They may be great parents, that court still does not want them to have the money.